I've barely got here. Tomorrow I'll have 3 years and 6 months. You know, so I haven't been here very long. But for me, when I first got here, I was just an addict. Today, I'm an addict in recovery. That's my difference in today. Today, I live a different life. You know, thanks to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, when I got here, I didn't get here on a winning streak. I got here on a nudge from the judge. See, I didn't walk in on my own like a lot of people do. I got sent here through the court system. You know, I was looking at 3 to 5, and I said, well, you want to get a program or... I ended up taking the program. And you know, for me to... Okay. Yeah, thank you, man. Anyway, you know, for me, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, was get a program of recovery. You know, when I first got this program, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to fly through this thing and do it. And then when I get done, I'm going to go use again. You know, God had other plans for me. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, I ended up getting a sponsor that was as worse or as bad as I was. And I thought that I hooked up with this guy and he showed me how to do this. You know, I can't really say enough about my sponsor. He became my sponsor because he's a lot like me, you know, and he wasn't a sponsor who just told me everything was okay. Anytime I screwed up and did something wrong, he never told me I was going to be okay. He said, you know, you can do anything you want in this program, but we'll be willing to pay the consequences for all your actions. You know, I got real close with this man. And he's not here today. See, he was going to be the warm-up speaker, and he asked me to do this for him. You know, so it's like, and like he tells me, he says, every time you're asked to do something, you have to accept, especially for Narcotics Anonymous. So I accepted. So you got to be patient with me. This is my first time I've ever been up here doing this. You know, I know when I first got here, I didn't understand this program. And like Michael said, after 90 days, you think you know everything. I'm that guy. You know, I mean, I thought I knew everything. You know, I thought I could stay clean forever. But, you know, I didn't know anything. And today I still don't know anything. You know, it's one day at a time for me. You know, I started using drugs at a very young age, probably about 12, 13 years old. You know, and I didn't use drugs. And when I did them, I didn't like them. But I practiced enough at them to where my body accepted them, and then I started to like them. And like I am right now, I'm nervous, a little bit scared, you know. Those are my feelings today. Today I got those. You know, when I got here, when I was in my addiction, I did drugs to hide those feelings. Then I could come up here, and I didn't care what you guys thought of me. You know, I didn't think much of you either. Today, I do this on my own with no help of any altering substances, non-altering substances. You know, I don't know, you know, just, for me, this program has saved my, gave me a new life. It gave me a chance to start my life all over again. Had I ever thought I was, my sponsor told me to do a little inventory and figure out what I wanted and make some goals for a year. You know, and in my little paper I was writing, I just want to be a better mechanic and I want to do this and a few minor things. You know, I've way succeeded and surpassed all my goals I've ever had dreamed in my life. You know, who would have ever thought, you know, a junkie like me, a gutter hype, would end up, you know, having keys to a shop, you know, running other people's equipment, you know, being a boss, getting an office. You know, those are things I never imagined doing. You know, this program, because I got a sponsor, and I got a sponsor that has a sponsor. See, so whenever I have a problem, I can go to my sponsor's sponsor. You know, I got people in this program that are real. You know, they pulled me up here, and they said, it's going to be all right. You know, and the first time in my life, I've actually got to make friends. Because my whole life in my addiction, I didn't have any friends. I didn't want any friends. Because you guys all wanted something from me. You guys wanted to do my dope. You know, that's the way I looked at everything. You know, so it's more for me, none for you. You know, and if you had some, I wanted to do yours. I'll be a friend. You know, today it's not like that. Today I got friends that don't want anything from me, just for me to stay clean. You know, and that's real important to me. I don't, I can't even imagine why I'm up here. I'm really like shocked, you know, but, you know, this is a great program for me, you know, for me, personally. I don't know about you, but when I was out there, everybody to me was a victim. You know, it was always, how can I get over? I mean, ways and means to get more. You know, that was me. And all that ever got me was time. You know, today I don't have to do time. I'm doing my time in here while I'm safe. You know, I'm not afraid of much except me and my addiction and what my addiction will do to me if I go back out. You know, that's one thing I'm very afraid of going back out, because I probably won't make it back. You know, and I don't want to find out. I really don't. You know, when I got here, I was in the hospital. I was spitting up blood, and that was an ugly situation for me. I got here on crutches, and then I said, well, you know, and I was still on my disease, and when I would get out of the hospital, because they shot me up with some morphine, I feel good. I stopped at the connections house and get loaded all over again and wonder why I wasn't getting better. You know, I kept saying there's something in the air. You know, something, I got a virus or something. You know, all those sick things that my mind was telling me wasn't true. What it was I was killing myself. You know, through the drugs. You know, today I don't have to do anything. I don't drink. I don't do anything that's going to affect my mind. You know, today I do everything the way it's supposed to be done, naturally. You know, this is a good opportunity for me to realize that maybe I can do this. Because when I got it, I was really afraid. I was scared. I said, man, what are these people going to think about me? You know, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you think about me. What matters is what I think about you. You know, because I can't afford to get resentment today. Because the resentment will probably take me back out. You know, I've learned a lot from people like Bobby, Michael P., and all the groups from right here in front of me. You know, those are all from my home group that I was in Visalia too, see. And it's great to see people come up and support one another. You know, because when I was in my addiction, I wasn't going to support you from nowhere. When I went to jail, none of my homeboys and friends supported me. They never wrote to me. They never accepted my call. You know, in this place here, you'll have honest friends that will do anything for you. You know, like my father tells me, you can call me anytime you want. Just don't call me when you're loaded. You know. And that's very true. You know, it's his responsibility. He tells me it's his responsibility to be there for me when I call him. You know, but if I call him loaded, it's not his responsibility because he didn't get me loaded. You know, and this program is an easy program. We just make it complicated. I made my program very complicated when I got here. You know, I did everything I wasn't supposed to do. You know, when I got here, I didn't have any spirituality. You know, it took me 2 years to do my second step. You know, and after 2 years, I got word of going back out. I was going through some bad times, and I was getting up. I kept thinking, I'm going to go get loaded. And this is something that I couldn't turn off in my head. You know, and then my sponsor put me back on the second step. And when I went to the second step, you know, I ended up doing my second step. And then I had to go find me my spirituality, you know. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I didn't have that higher power. You know, and I ended up, it was on a Good Friday, I ended up going to a priest, you know, and I asked him, I needed to find God, I needed to find a higher power of my understanding. And he told me that God wasn't a power. The only thing in this world that has any power is Satan, and that was my addiction. God is the spirit who works through other human beings to get me a message to help me stay clean, you know. And then when I was all done with him, I kind of threatened him. When I walked up to his door, knocked on his door, he wanted to put some ashes on my forehead. And I told him to step back. I told him, you know, all my whole life I've been taking things and putting things in my body that I didn't know what they were going to do to me, and it didn't matter, and today I don't have to do that. Through this program, I'm going to ask before you do anything for me. You know, I need to know what it's going to do. And I asked him about his ashes, and he explained it to me. And when we went in his office and talked, I told him, I said, you know, I come from the place that if you're walking down the street with $2,000 in your pocket, I don't care what collar you're wearing, I'm going to rob you. Because that's the addict that I become. You know? And he kind of was shocked at me. And when we got done having our little conversation, he tells me, son, he says, I hope you find a church and find your higher power. If you look for him, you shall find him. You know? And he says, I want you to go to a church, not my church. You don't have to come to mine, just go to his church. But like the addict that I am, he's not wanting me to go to his farm, now I go to his church. You know, that's just the way I work. He's telling me not to be there, and I'll be there. You know? I'm broken. My mind's broken. That's my first thought, you know? And today, I'm learning to take direction. And I'm doing all these things because I have a sponsor. You know, anytime I have any issues in my life, I can call somebody that knows me personally. You know, I don't do this by myself anymore. You know, because by myself, this gets me in trouble. Every time I get in the car, I wreck the thing, you know? I've been through too many cars already. Today, I'm trying to keep them. You know, I'm trying to keep my sanity. And this place is the only place that I found that found me sanity. But along with this thing with Narcotics Anonymous, I also found me a higher power. And my higher power works for me, so now I do church. I don't do church first. I do Narcotics Anonymous first. Well, I'm Narcotics Anonymous. I won't stay clean, and then I'll go kill myself. See, God gave me the choice of free will, you know, and my will isn't good when I think for myself. I can't drive yet. I gotta let him drive my car. You know, this is the way this program is done, one day at a time. A lot of times I gotta do it 1 minute at a time. You know, I spend a lot of time at work. I'm having to deal with people. This program has taught me how to play well with others. That's another thing this thing has done. Showed me to look at my own character defects and what I gotta do to correct them. You know, because now I have to deal with people on a daily basis, and I gotta walk out of the office and go out in the shop by myself and go into the restroom and hide and do the serenity prayer. Why? Because I'm insane. You know, I will do something very stupid and that will hurt me or others, and I try not to do that today. You know, this is a very important thing for me in my life. You know, that's why I do Narcotics Anonymous. I don't do it every day anymore like I did, but I do at least 3 meetings a week, you know. It's because I need to be there. I don't go there for nobody but me. I'm the sick one. When I go to a meeting, I don't care who's going there. I go there for me. You know, and if somebody gets something out of what I said, I'm very grateful that they did. But I do this because I'm pretty selfish with my recovery, because I got to take care of me first. And then when I take care of myself, then I can take care of other someone else, my family. You know, because when in my addiction, the first people I ever hurt was my family members. They were the easiest victims that came my path. Instead of going out and robbing the neighbor, I would rob my parents, you know, or take from my kids. You know, those are just things that I did without thinking. You know, and in this program, I get to look at all that, and then I had to go on my first step. I had to do an inventory. You know, this thing about steps is crazy for me. I mean, I'm still, you know, it's not hard. You just got to be patient and do it. You know, just do a little bit at a time. Just do it. The only wrong way not to do it is just don't do it at all. That's the only wrong way not to do your steps, if you don't do them at all. You know, I don't know. I think I've said enough. And that I'll keep coming back.
Two quick announcements. One, if anybody's getting thirsty, that cooler right there, everything in it is for free. Also, we have a donation today. Glenn has donated softballs for the children, gentlemen, and some mitts and some other stuff. Feel free to come on up and get that. And with that, I'd like to introduce Bobby T, he's our main speaker today. He was nice enough to come all the way up from down south, even though we kept having this impending weather. And I'd like you guys to give him a warm message, and he's got a great message.
Hi, NA family. My name is Bobby. I'm an addict. Okay, I got it. I'm doing a little bit of a prayer here. As you're going to find out, I wear my emotions on my sleeve, so my Narcotics Anonymous has given me that, so bear with me. I don't know about you guys, but I woke up this morning and I said a prayer. And the prayer that I said was, don't let it rain today, God. That, Michael T. calls that my illusions of grandeur. There's got to be 1,000 people here, right? Because I got to try and feel good. You know what? I'm glad, first of all, to be in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. I'd like to welcome those people that are new, and I'd like to congratulate those people that have birthdays, and I know you didn't pick up chips, but keep coming back. You know, I usually don't speak about what it was like, because I think we all know what that was like, but I need to share that with you, because I need to identify with you so that you can identify with me. Normally what I like to talk about is I like to talk about recovery, because that's really what my focus is here in Narcotics Anonymous, is on recovery. We all know how we got here, but I think it's important that we identify with each other, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like for me. I had my first drink of alcohol at 7 years old, and I remember distinctly that drink. And the reason I remember it's because, and the reason I remember it so clearly today is because the person who gave me that drink, we put in the ground this year. Okay? He died. And, you know, I come from a culture where drinking was okay. Matter of fact, when I was using drugs, drugs was okay to be used there too. As long as you did it at the house, it was okay. It was part of the culture, so that's what we did. You know, I was thinking on the way up here about, you know, putting that uncle of mine in the ground, and you know, kind of like to tell you where the family's at with that is that they put a can of Budweiser in his coffin with it. So that, you know, did I tell you something about like how we dealt with my first drug of choice? It was alcohol. Okay, and that's what happened. I remember it changed how I felt, because at that time, you know, I didn't feel too good about me. I'd had a mother who left me when I was 3 years old, and I kind of went through this relationship with my father where we got really close shortly after that. I remember that everywhere he went, I went with him, and I liked that. You know, I had somebody that I could identify with, and you know, I felt like I was the most important person in the world. And you know, several years later, he decided that he wanted to get married again, and he left us, and he left me with my aunt, my uncle to take care of me, and for the first time in my life, I felt like I got abandoned. You know, and then I was trying to deal with the fact about like, how am I going to deal with somebody else taking my dad's attention away from me? So, you know, I knew that he'd left me, and that he would never come back, and we'd never have that kind of relationship again. So I developed my very first resentment. And that resentment carried me through my addiction. You know? It carried me through my addiction. Because what happened shortly after that was I had an aunt who had to take care of me. She didn't want to take care of me. She didn't like the responsibility. It was dropped off on her. See, I come from a Filipino family. My dad went back to the Philippines to get remarried again, and he was gone for like 2.5-3 years. Something like that. So I spent 2.5-3 years with a child abuser, and she didn't like the fact that she had to take care of us, and so she made us feel the pain that was necessary to feel every time that she got angry. And what I learned how to do with that is I learned how to capture that feeling. You know, I remember saying to the God of my understanding at that time that you know, please take me out of this. Please take me out of this, and he never showed up. At least I didn't think he showed up. You know, and my early life started off in a lot of pain, and so it was no wonder that I was seeking relief early on. And I remember when I took that first drink at 7 years old, that it changed how I felt, and so I continued to do what our culture does. I tried to hang around with the men because they're the ones who were free enough to give out the alcohol, and as it later turned out, some of the drugs. And, you know, it changed how I felt. I remember how I felt. You know, I didn't do a lot of drinking up to that point, but shortly after that, I was probably about 13, and my parents opened up this mom-and-pop store, and they sold beer there, and I drank a lot of that beer there. That's really what it was all about. That was my early drug of choice, was drinking alcohol. You know, I sit in meetings sometimes and I think about, you know, what it was like when I was a kid, when I was doing my four step. I thought about that a lot. I thought about, you know, when I grew up, I really didn't think I was going to grow up and become a drug addict, but I know that I needed to change how I felt. I was afraid. I was totally afraid. Kind of like the same feeling I felt when I first came into Narcotics Anonymous. I was afraid then too. I continued to go through high school. I did very well in grammar school, you know, because I was like an overachiever, and I got into high school, and I started drinking every weekend, and that's what my life was all about, was drinking during the weekends. And because my parents had access to alcohol, what I became is I became the bootlegger for the high school. You know, when the band was going to go somewhere, I was the one who supplied all the booze and made me feel like I was important. And that's the way it went. Anyway, you know, I went through high school. I never picked up a book after my sophomore year in high school. And I continued to do well in school. And the only reason I did that, I probably revert that back to my parents. Thank God for my parents sending me to this parochial Catholic school where, you know, they were very hard and they taught us how to study real well. And so I just kind of like skated by that way. And then, I got out of high school. When I got out of high school, I was drinking pretty much every day by then. And I remember I went up to visit my mother, my real mother, who was living up in Vallejo, California. And she was an alcoholic, and so, I continued to drink every day. And it was okay with her. I drank her booze. And I was always full of discontent, you know, never ever happy about anything that was going on. And I remember that I tried to do something different. I took my first geographic, and I joined the military. I joined the U.S. Navy. And the whole time, all along, I've been developing these resentments all along, you know. It was like, I kind of got this feeling like I got to always do these things by myself. I remember when I graduated, I asked, out of high school, there was four guys that we were going to all join the Marine Corps together, and it never happened. You know, those guys went and joined the Marine Corps together, and they left me out. So I developed a resentment against that. I carried that resentment with me for a long, long time. You know, little did I know that God was taking care of me the whole time. You know, out of those three guys that joined the military, two of them died in Vietnam, and one got a dishonorable discharge, and I think it was God's way of like telling me that I didn't, you know, that he was going to protect me and save me, and I didn't realize it at the time. You know, and I got in the military, and when I was younger, in my teenage years, I was looking around the environment. I know a lot of you, as old as I am, probably remember this, but whenever we got busted for like drinking, all the cops would do is like take the beer and shake it out and say, hey, don't drink in town anymore, go out in the country. So we do that, you know, and that's the way it was throughout all of my teenage years. Even in the military at that time, it was like they didn't care. It's like, you know what, I got arrested for grand theft auto in the military under the influence of alcohol and pot. We were smoking some pot and stole this guy's car, and the city cops would throw us in jail and hold us for the military. The military would come and get us and say, don't do that again. Right? And so when I first came into Narcotics Anonymous, I felt like I was totally different than the rest of you. See, I didn't think that I was like you guys. And how untrue that really is. My disease has lied to me all my life, and my disease of addiction is really what has been telling me lies for a long, long time. So anyway, in the military, I continued to drink on a regular basis. I was drinking every day. During my last year of service, I got a notification from my cousin. One of my cousins had gotten killed in Vietnam, and about 2 months later, they were asking for volunteers, and I felt I owed him something. So I volunteered to go to Vietnam as part of the Navy, and it was there where my true addiction really, really took off. I was introduced to pot. We smoked a lot of pot at that time, and opium, and my first introduction to amphetamines, and I did it every day, every day. You know, I started to learn how to hustle in order to get it. At that time, we were only making like $98 a month, and you can't stay loaded on $98 a month. At least I couldn't anyway. So it was about, trying to hustle. So that's what we did, you know, we hustled. Now, the very first hustle I remember I got into was that I found out who all the religious guys were in the service, because if they didn't drink, then what I did is they used to give us these little chits where you would like turn them in and they'd give you a fifth of alcohol. So we'd go hit up all the religious guys during the first of the month to make sure that we had enough alcohol to carry us through the end of the month. And then, in a way, drugs and alcohol kind of like saved me from that. You know, I came back. Fortunately, I was, I wasn't injured while I was over there. At that time, there was a lot of anti-war stuff that was going on, and I felt like I didn't belong. People, when I came back, made me feel like I was a piece of crap, and so it just kind of reinforced that, I need to stay loaded, man, because I didn't like how I felt. So I kind of like joined the hippie movement. I moved into Marin County at the Haight-Ashbury, and that period is a time in my life that I don't remember a lot of. It's like I stayed loaded the whole time. The whole time I was there, couldn't hold down jobs. We did a lot of psychedelics. I was in a meeting the other day, and there was a young person in this meeting with me, and they said, "What are psychedelics?" what's Zima, man? I've never had a drink of Zima. So it's like, there's things that you guys have used that I never used, what it was like a total escape, and I liked it. It was like, I was so loaded on psychedelics most of the time that I don't even remember if I was unloaded. It was like, we just keep taking them because they were available, and I don't ever remember getting a break from that, but there's about a 3-year period that I don't remember a whole lot of. And, you know what happened was, I got lost. And then as it went for the rest of my addiction, what happened was I tried to make some changes in my life. See, I figured that if I moved from one place to another, that things would be different, that was my controlling part of my disease. And so I moved back home. I'd stay there for a while, enrolled in college for the military assistance bill, and I really, I didn't go there to go to school. I just went there because they gave me money every month so that I could buy more drugs. And when that didn't work, I switched. My whole addiction's around trying to switch from one drug to another. See, when alcohol got too bad, what I do is I go over and I start smoking pot because that was the controlling part of it. And like, if I smoke pot, then I'll be okay, Never thinking that really what the whole bottom line behind getting loaded was about changing how I felt. See, because I can't deal with life without being loaded. That's the way that I felt. And what happened shortly after that is I tried to make a switch. I tried to go over and say, if I get in good physical shape, maybe if I do that and just drink maybe one beer a night and, smoke a half a joint, I'll be fine. And so I tried to do that, open up my own business, and took control of what I thought was control of my life, and did that for like 20 years. I started training in the martial arts, and I know it doesn't look like it now, but it's been 20 years since I did that. But I did that. I opened up karate schools throughout the whole valley. At one time, had 4 karate schools open. Had no idea how I did that. None. Other than what I did was I wrote a lot of hot checks, and as the money would come in, I paid for the hot checks. And, back in those days, it was like, it's not like it is now where they track you down and they stick you in jail for doing that kind of stuff. But, I used to think that, that I was unique. And I could do that kind of thing, so I must be really unique. And what happened shortly after that is my addiction really, really took off. I was now, by this time, drinking and using every day, every day. There was not a day that went by that I didn't do that. Finally got into speed, and that became my drug of choice all the way until I got into Narcotics Anonymous. And we all know how we got here. I want to talk about the end for me, because I don't want to spend much more time talking about what it was like. Okay? Because I want to talk about what it's been like since I've been here. Because really, that's what I think the message really is. What it was like at the end for me was that she had left me. And I want you to kind of like look over this way, because that's my wife Kathy sitting there in the blue chair. When she starts shaking her head like this, that means that I'm lying. Okay? So I have to remember that. And Anyway, the end for me was she had left. And, they talk about these little moments of clarity that you get. She'd been threatened to do that for a long time. And I said, go ahead, split. I don't care. I can handle this. I can do this by myself. You know, the bottom line was what it was is deep down inside was I was so afraid how not to use because I didn't know how not to do that. See, what is there in store for me if I don't use? How am I going to deal with all these feelings that I have inside about feeling like I'm totally inadequate? You know, I want to talk about feeling inadequate for a while. When Michael asked me to come up here and speak, what happens is there's this little voice in me. I call it the disease. It tells me that I am not worth it. So when I was 8 or 9 years old and that aunt was beating up on me, I knew that I wasn't worthwhile. She was reinforcing it. Every time she hit me, I knew that I wasn't worthwhile. And there was not going to be God there to save me. So when he asked me to speak, what happens, and this is part of my disease, and I understand that today, is that my head takes off. It tells me, you know what, Bobby, you're not worthwhile. You don't have a message to share. You know? And that's the reason why I use this, is because I always felt that way. Always. You know, I didn't let you know that, because I put on a different mask when I was looking. And, today what I find out in Narcotics Anonymous is that's what I need to do. I need to tell you the truth. The truth is that when I first came into Narcotics Anonymous, I was totally afraid. I was afraid I couldn't do this thing without drugs. And, so what happened was she left, and I got this moment of clarity as she was walking out the door. Both of my daughters were standing next to her. And, you know, I used to say in early recovery that what they said to me was, Daddy, why is it that you've chosen drugs and alcohol over us, and why do we have to leave? And I really truly believe that about the first 3 years of my recovery that they had said that. And the bottom line was they hadn't said that at all. I was looking directly into their eyes, and that's the message that I received. Because I thought that's what they said. I thought that's what they were thinking, when in fact it was what I was thinking. Why is it, Bobby, that you can't do this thing? Why can't you stop using drugs? And why have you made a choice about alcohol and drugs over the welfare of your family and your children? Just like it talks about in the book. And I had a dilemma. And the dilemma was, as soon as they left, I went out and scored as much dope as I could. I got as loaded as I could, and that voice kept going off in my head, going, yeah, Bobby, why is it that you've made that choice? Look at you now. Remember that feeling of not feeling worthwhile? You're right in the middle of it now. And what had happened was, for the very first time, I started feeling as if the drugs were not working for me anymore. Why wasn't that voice being shut off anymore? You know? And so what happened was, I continued to do that. I isolated out. This is a very special time of the month for me, because at this time of the month, about 17 years ago, is when I hit my bottom. And I remember I was going to this job. It was like from January to the end of April, I'd already missed 40 days of work. And I worked for a company at that time that fired you if you missed more than 5 days. So, you know, my disease kept telling me, hey, man, there's a reason why you can miss all these days. It's okay. It's like, because my addiction became so important. It became a full-time job to stay loaded now. I didn't need to be at work. The only reason I stayed at work is because that was my ticket to get drugs. The only reason I kept a job was because if I didn't keep that job, I'd have to go out and do those things I hear that you guys do. That is, you know, go out and rob somebody, you know, or, you know, I do the stuff. I gotta watch my language here. You know, it's like, the whole town can hear what I'm saying, I feel like. So, the bottom line is that, I had that moment of clarity and stayed with me until, May the 9th. On May the 9th, or actually May the 8th, I showed up at work and I went by this bulletin board, and on the bulletin board says, if you have a drug problem, call this number. And so what I did was I called that number. And and the reason I did that is because I thought, you know what, if I can get a break and I don't have to use for a short period of time, maybe I can get this thing under control and I can go back doing what I was doing. See, at the end of April, what had happened was I was smoking on a pipe with crack cocaine, and every time I'd take a hit, I'd go into a seizure and I'd fall down. And what would happen to me is the same thing that Richard Pryor talks about. You know, the pipe would start talking to me. I'd come to again, going, "Oh wow, you know, that was a great high, man." It was like, and they go, "Whoa, you know, it's like something's happening here." And what I left out is that at that period of time, I hadn't taken a bath in probably 2 weeks. And as I found out later on, as I got clean, I hadn't gone to the bathroom probably in the same period of time. What I didn't realize is that my body was shutting down, you know. You don't not take a piss for 2 weeks. What it means is your kidneys are shutting down because of the use of the drugs. And so I got afraid. I was going, man, how am I going to do this thing? You know, for the very first time in my life, I was totally afraid. I felt just like that little kid who's getting beat on again, thinking, man, you know, the thing that I've relied on my whole life is going, right? Now what am I going to do? So I checked into this inpatient program. That's what they recommended for me. It's called the ARC out of Fresno. I try and say that because there are some people here from Maynard's, and I'm glad that you guys are here. You know, and I'll share a little bit about what I did there, and hopefully you won't have to do the same thing that I did. And, you know, so I went into this 30-day program. And it was on May 9th, they checked me into this 30-day program, and thank God that they took people to meetings every day, because that's how I found Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I came in, and I did the thing that I usually do when I'm afraid. That is, I start focusing on what's happening with you, and don't talk about what's happening with me. And the counselors picked up on it right away. They said, "Hey, Bobby, when are you going to start talking about you?" See, because I had the solution for you. I knew you were a drug addict. You know, there was a girl in there that was in the program with me. She was an RN, right? And she was like, she was talking about like taking morphine away from a terminally ill patient. I was going, "You're a drug addict, man. You know, not me. I'm just here for 30 days to try and clean up a little bit, and I'm going to go back out and try and do it again." And you know what happened was, by the grace of God, I started hearing the message. I started going into meetings of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'll say this, and I know it pissed some people off, but that's okay, because that's part of my recovery. They took us to AA meetings as well. And, you know, I was in an AA meeting one time, and my good friend Roy B., who's passed away now, used to say that Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, but Narcotics Anonymous set me free. And I find that that's true for me today. See, when I got clean early in 1988, by the way, May 9th is not my clean day. My clean date is actually August 6th of 1988. And if you can tell, there's a little bit of difference there. What happened was that I started getting the message. The message was that you no longer have to use drugs again. And I didn't believe that. So who would not want to use drugs? I didn't come here to quit using drugs. I came here because I just needed a 30-day break so I go back out there and do it again. It's called a reservation. I was telling Michael T, I said, that guy who won the 50-50, if he hasn't got a reservation, he's got one now. They just put $90 in his hand or whatever it was, right? So that's what I had. I had a reservation. The reservation was I wasn't done. And then I started hearing things that you guys talked about in meetings about the insanity of doing things over and over and over again and expecting different results, you know? And all that stuff kind of like stuck with me. And I think probably the biggest thing that impressed me the most, though, was the fact that people were getting honest. They were sitting in meetings and getting honest. And so I adapted and I adopted Narcotics Anonymous as part of my program. At that time, we only had like 3 meetings in Narcotics Anonymous in the Visalia area, so I had to do the other program in order to be able to stay clean. And what happened was, 3 days after I got out of this inpatient program, I remember I was sitting in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, and I had the urge to use. I wasn't sure whether or not I was done. I was out of the safe environment now, and I wasn't sure whether or not I was done, so what I did is I went in that meeting and I snatched somebody up out of that meeting. I said, "You know what, I feel like using today." And that guy stayed with me from that meeting on until that feeling passed for me. And I remember thinking, "Why is he doing that?" why would he do something like that to me? And but the bottom line was, I wasn't done yet. I went to one of the aftercare meetings that we went to, and there was a kid that came in, and he came in, he was all tore up, and, you know, been using it for like 3 days in a row, and we all jumped his case, going, man, what are you doing? It's like, you know, you relapsed, and the counselor said, stop. You know what? Sometimes relapse is good for our recovery. And that's all I heard. I didn't hear anything after that. I was going, great, there's my ticket to ride, man. Is he telling me it's okay for me to go back out and use? Right? And so I did. I took off from there, went out and scored. I didn't even go, I knew where to go. You know, I didn't have to go but 15 blocks from where I was. I went there and I scored, and I drove back, and I stopped at the liquor store and bought some 151 and made up a pipe out of a socket set, and I stopped at the Traver truck stop between Fresno and Vice City, and I pulled off the side of the road, and I lit it back up again, and I went into a seizure. Changed it and said, now what, Bobby? Now what? And what had happened was this overwhelming feeling came over me about being a failure. So you can't even do this right, Bobby. Now what have you got? You can't do recovery right. You can't do using anymore. Now what have you got? And what it was the beginning of the surrender of my program. And I didn't know it at the time. See, I wasn't sure I was done. There's the insanity, you know? I'm dying, and I still have to use, because I don't know how to do it any other way. That's the only way I know how to do it is be loaded. And so I went back to the meets, because I needed to save my ass. I mean, my face. Sorry about that. I couldn't save my ass. I was trying to save my face, you see? Because if I didn't go to meets, you guys would know that I use, right? So I didn't go back to the meeting and tell you I was a newcomer. I continued to go back to the meetings with the shame and the guilt. You know, they talk about this disease being a progressive disease. I need to tell you that the shame and the guilt became progressive as well. And I lived with using and relapsing every day until August the 6th. And I'd like to tell you that I picked up chips too, by the way. You know, picked up 30-day chips and 60-day chips, and then I remember I was on my way to pick up a 90-day chip, and the lie was all I could think about. You're going to go pick up a chip and say you've been clean for 90 days, and you know it's a lie, Bobby. You know it's a lie. You feel the shame and the guilt and you start over again. And so I'm on my way down, and I got loaded again. Screw it. I got to try and get rid of this feeling. That's the way I felt. I need to get rid of this feeling. And the first hit I took again, I went into a seizure again. And it was at that time that I didn't know what to do. I think I was really, really close to suicide about that time. And all I knew how to do was to keep coming back to meetings. And I went to a meeting in my home group, and I sat through the whole meeting with my head down between my legs, because that's the way that I felt. And there was a young kid sitting next to me, about 17 years old, and he stood up and he said, I relapsed. And something told me to stand up. And so I stood up. And I said, I did too. I did too. And the magic of Narcotics Anonymous came through. Everybody in that meeting stood up, gave me a hug, and told me to keep coming back. Keep coming back. And I didn't feel accepted. I felt I was still dealing with the shame that I couldn't do this thing right. And it was at that time that, I didn't know at the time, but as I continued to work my program, I realized that I finally surrendered. Not through any power of my own, but through the power that kind of like happened for me today. See, when I woke up this morning, I prayed, please don't let it rain. You know? And what I found is that through the members of Narcotics Anonymous, what it is that I found that I don't underestimate the power of prayer. That's what they told me. And I've learned to believe that today. I've really, truly learned to believe that today. You know,
if you're new and you're having a problem with your higher power, hang in there. You know, find anyone. You know, everybody's got an opinion here, and everybody's got experiences with a religious background, a lack of religious background, but, you know, find the higher power. If nothing else, act as if. That's what it tells us to do in the basic text. Act as if you believe in one. And eventually you'll get to see the power of, like, what really happens here. This is the time of the month where I get really, really grateful because I know that I don't ever have to do that again. You know, and I'd like to tell you that the feelings of inadequacy have gone away. They have not. It's the disease of addiction that I'm going to have for the rest of my life. But what I fill that with today is I fill that with what I've learned here in Narcotics Anonymous. Number one, I got to show up. And that's, I've got to be in meetings as often as possible, if not every day. You know, when they told us to do 90 meetings in 90 days, after that, I remember I did probably 230 meetings in 90 days. So I had to do that other program. I still thank that program for giving me that help. Today, in our area, we have over 68 meetings in Narcotics Anonymous, and I choose to go to Narcotics Anonymous and call it the program that continues to save my life and my ass every day. Every day. You know, and I thank the people in Narcotics Anonymous for that. You know, sometimes I go to meetings, and the only reason I go to meetings is to get a hug from somebody. Because I was sharing in Minstag meeting that I consider to be my home group the other day about the fact that, you know, I didn't realize that when I first came in and I started hugging you guys, that that love and that abandonment that I felt from my dad is being replaced. It's being replaced by you guys teaching me how that you're going to love me. You know, I don't need my dad's love anymore. I found it here in Narcotics Anonymous. It's filled me. It's filled me. It continues to fill me. And so when you stick your hand out to shake my hand, I'm not going to shake your hand. I'm going to give you a hug because I need it. I need that. And that was one of the beginning attractions of Narcotics Anonymous to me, that men could do that. You know, I've got a sponsor here today who, his very first sponsor, him and I got clean together. And he doesn't know this, but I want to share this. His name was Johnny Mack. He was an important part of my early recovery. Because what he did, he kind of like made my recovery fun. You know, going to these outside things, like coming up here to Train Hard, was part of what we did in early recovery. I mean, we were so excited about early recovery that we went everywhere. We wanted to feel what it felt like to be in unity days and stuff like that. And a lot of times he would like throw curves at me. I remember sitting in a meeting one time, we just got through with the meeting, the middle of the week, and he goes, Bobby, I need your help. He goes, I just found one of my connections, man, and the dude owes me some money. And he knew that I did the martial arts, so he goes, come on, man, you better help me collect that money. And I was going, sure, why not? And let's go do it, right? And so he matches up about four of us, like all of the Philippines do, right? We gather a bunch of us together to go collect that money, and he sticks us in a car, and he drives us over to the next town to another meeting, and Narcotics Anonymous, and says, here's my connection, man. It's right here. And so, you know, we did a lot of fun things like that. And the reason I bring that up is because I want to share something with you, right? I was in a meeting one day, and people talked about, somebody talked about, if you don't know who your higher power is, look right next to you. Because that may be who your higher power is, talking to that person. And that's the way I began to look at Johnny Mack. Johnny and I began...